The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, I know this happened earlier in the week, but that was one of the most boring national championship games I have watched in quite some time. Congratulations to UConn. They absolutely deserved it. They did exactly what they did this entire tournament, and that was absolutely stomp their opponent into the ground. But unfortunately, it was just kind of like San Diego State had no idea they were playing in the national championship. It was just a bad game from the start. I mean, there was one point where they went, like, I believe it was like 13 minutes where they didn't even score a point. So it was that bad, where just like UConn was knocking down the shots, San Diego State was knocking down nothing, and it was just an overall bad game. UConn got the win 76-59. So congratulations to them. I mean, they absolutely deserved it. They absolutely dominated. But from just a fan perspective of basketball in a national championship game, you expect to see a lot more, and unfortunately, it was just an absolute blowout, and I turned it off at some point in the second half. I watched most of it, but then I could just tell that UConn was going to win, and I was like, whatever, I'll just turn this shit off. So that is how the national championship went. Congratulations to UConn. They 100% deserved that championship, but it was not a fun one to watch. Unless you were a UConn fan, I imagine UConn fans loved it, but I just, as a basketball fan, thought it was very boring and uneventful, but that is sometimes the way championship games go. But speaking of championships, we are getting closer and closer to the NBA playoffs. This is the last weekend of the regular season, and so the playoff picture is pretty much set. We've had quite a few teams clinch this week or win their divisions this week. And so pretty much everything's looking as it is. So let's catch up and see where we're at this current point in time. Right now in the Western Conference, the Denver Nuggets are the number one overall seed, and they did clinch the number one overall seed. So that's where they're going to be at 52-28. Then the number two seed right now is the Memphis Grizzlies at 50-30. Number three seed, the Sacramento Kings at 48-32. Number four seed, Phoenix Suns at 45-35. Number five seed, Los Angeles Clippers at 42-38. And the number six seed, the Golden State Warriors at 42-38. Then on the play-in tournament side, the number seven seed are the Los Angeles Lakers at 41-39. Number eight seed, the New Orleans Pelicans at 41-39. And speaking of the Pelicans, it's looking like Zion is not going to play if the Pelicans end up getting into the play-in. He won't be playing that first game. So he's missed a couple of months now, and now the Pelicans are looking like they're going to make the playoffs or at least make the play-in, and it's looking like they will not have Zion. So that's a pretty shitty circumstance, but it's also the theme of Zion's career so far is that he's just been injured, and he really isn't much of a difference maker when you're just sitting on the bench injured. Then the number nine seed right now, the Minnesota Timberwolves at 40-40, and the number 10 seed, the Oklahoma City Thunder at 39-42. So that's how the Western Conference is looking right now. And then the Eastern Conference side, the number one overall seed, and they clinched the number one overall seed. That would be the Milwaukee Bucks at 58-22. The number two seed, the Boston Celtics at 55-25. Number three seed, Philadelphia 76ers at 52-28. Number four seed, Cleveland Cavaliers at 51-30. Number five seed, New York Knicks at 47-33. And the number six seed, Brooklyn Nets at 44-36. Then turning to the play-in side of the Eastern Conference, number seven seed, the Miami Heat at 43-37. Number eight seed, Atlanta Hawks at 41-39. Number 9 seed, Toronto Raptors at 40-40, and the number 10 seed, the Chicago Bulls at 38-42. So as I said, this is just about how the playoffs are going to look. Some teams might adjust their seeding position in the next couple of games, but overall, this is pretty much what it looks like. I kind of feel like when we discuss Monday's show that pretty much this is it. As I said, there might be a team or two adjustment, but overall, this is what we're looking at. And it's going to be pretty interesting. Play-in begins next week, and then the playoffs begin next weekend. So going to be great basketball. Nothing better than playoff basketball. Just love me some playoff basketball, even though the Lakers are going to suck. So I know that they're not going to do shit in the postseason. They may win one of the play-in games. Hell, they may even win two play-in games. We'll see how they do. But I kind of feel like they're going to be an immediate first-round exit if they do get past the play-in. But even though they're going to suck, I still enjoy playoff basketball, love watching the whole process of everything. And, you know, my money right now still would be on the Bucks. Obviously, I'll be making my predictions on Monday's show once all the playoffs have been set. But pretty much I'm looking at the Bucks. They look like the best team right now. And if they're able to stay healthy, because that's obviously the only problem with every team this season, is they have injury issues. And when you lose your big guys, that's going to be an issue. And I mean, if you'll remember last year, the Philadelphia 76ers headed into the playoffs were one of the hottest teams. Then Joel Embiid got injured, and they were, I believe they were a first-round exit, if I seem to remember correctly. So, but I felt like they were going to win the championship, and they did not. And so that's what happens. You lose a dude to injury, and that could cost you everything. But when I'm looking at the Milwaukee Bucks roster, they are just hands down best team, in my opinion. They're great defensively, great offensively. They've got a superstar in Giannis. They've got Drew Holiday just having an excellent and phenomenal season. They have an extremely deep bench. They've already won a championship. They've been a playoff team the last at least five, six seasons. So they are just a team that knows how to do it, and I just kind of feel like they're the team you don't really want to face. But we'll see what happens. And as I said, I'll be making my predictions on Monday, since all of the playoff matchups will be set by then. All right, so we do have a nice UFC matchup this weekend. Actually, two that I'm going to discuss in UFC 287. First, we have the main event, which is the middleweight championship between the champion Alex Pereira, who is 7-1, and Israel Adesanya, who's 23-2. This is part two, of course, of their last matchup, which was a very, very good matchup. I mean, it was back and forth between rounds, but I'd say overall, if it ended up going to the scorecards, Adesanya would have easily won, because he really did dominate Pereira as the fight wore on. But I've said this many times with fights, one of the reasons why I love watching UFC and boxing in particular is because just one person, one fighter will just be down and out, and they're just getting their ass kicked, and all of a sudden they get their second wind and they just pummel the shit out of their opponent and get the magical win. And that's what Pereira did. Now, first of all, Pereira actually owns Israel Adesanya. They used to kickbox against each other. That's where they both started, was in kickboxing. And Pereira beat Adesanya twice in kickboxing. One was a knockout and one was a decision. Then, obviously, Pereira knocked Adesanya out this last matchup. I mean, Adesanya was owning this last matchup. He, first round, I believe, went to Pereira. Then Adesanya got the second round. And then I feel like as the fight wore on, Adesanya was just wearing him out. But then fifth round happens, and out of nowhere, Pereira gets just this second wind. He's able to get some really, really nice shots in on Adesanya, and the ref ended up stopping the match because, I mean, Pereira got Adesanya in such bad position, you could just see he was not going to get out of it, and he was just going to get knocked the fuck out, so they had to stop that fight. And Pereira walked away with yet another win against Israel Adesanya. So he really has his number. And I feel like the pressure is more on Adesanya to win this matchup, because he's already lost all three matchups against Pereira. And he should have won the last matchup. So he probably is feeling like, dude, this dude just owns me. But Adesanya is an excellent fighter. He's one of my favorite fighters personally. I just really like what he's all about. But I like Pereira too. The guy is, he's a killer, and he doesn't back down at all, and he has Adesanya's number. So while I kind of want to take Adesanya in this one, just because I feel like he has to get this win, I'm actually going to go with Pereira. He owns the dude, and he's not afraid of the guy. He doesn't give a shit, and like I said, he owns him. 3 out of 3 right now. Not saying Adesanya can't get the win, but usually when somebody dominates you like this in different arenas, I got to go with Pereira. So I think Pereira is going to hang on to the title, and I think he's going to beat Adesanya. I think he's going to get another knockout. I feel like, though, if this goes the distance, and if it goes all 5 rounds, and if we have to go to the scorecards, I think it will go to Adesanya, because I feel like he is... Overall, I think he's a better fighter, and I think he has more stamina. I mean, obviously, he's been in the UFC longer than Pereira. I mean, you could just tell by the records, 23-2 for Adesanya, 7-1 for Pereira, so a huge difference there. Because with Pereira in their last matchup, you could tell he was really, really winded in the 3rd and 4th rounds. And then, like I said, he got the second wind in the 5th round. Don't know where it came from, but he got the second wind, was able to get the really good kicks and punches in, and knocked him out. And so I kind of feel like if this goes the distance, it's going to be in Adesanya's favor, because he's got more stamina, and he seems to be the better fighter in that type of arena. But I just kind of see, you know, like I said, Pereira owns this guy, and I feel like Pereira is going to get the knockout again. I'm going to go 3rd round of knockout for Pereira on this one. Then the other matchup, the co-main event, that I'm really looking forward to because it has one of my favorite fighters in it. It's Gilbert Burns, who's 21-5. Currently, he's the 5th ranked in the welterweight ranks. And then versus Jorge Masvidal. Masvidal! Love that last name. Love that fighter, by the way. One of my favorite fighters. He's 11th ranked in welterweight right now. 35-16 record. He has said if he loses this weekend, he's going to retire. So I was rooting for him to win anyways, but I'd really like to not see Masvidal retire. I've really enjoyed his career. His knockout, one of the most famous UFC knockouts you will ever see is won by Jorge Masvidal. I'm drawing an extreme blank on the opponent. But you know what I'm talking about if you are a UFC fan, and that is when Jorge Masvidal kneed the motherfucker in the face and finished a fight in, like, I think it was 7 seconds, knocked the dude out. Ben Askren, that was his name, Ben Askren. He knocked his ass out cold with a knee to the face. It was so fucking awesome to watch, and it never gets old. I watched it again because I wanted to rewatch the Pereira Adesanya #1, which I did, and I was like, well, I can't not watch this Masvidal Askren fight again, because it only takes a few minutes anyways. I mean, it's very short and sweet and beautiful, but Masvidal, he just rah, boom, pow, over, and it's hilarious too, just because, like, Askren was talking so much shit that Masvidal really did some what most people would call tasteless mocking in the ring. I mean, like, when he knocks him out, he knocks him out cold. I mean, this is one of the coldest knockouts you will at. He goes stiff. I mean, stiff. Like, there's one point where his left leg is, like, stiff, like, stuck out. And when he starts turning over, when the ref or somebody starts turning him over, his leg is still in the exact same position. Like, that's how knocked out cold he is. And Masvidal, after he knocks him out, runs to the opposite side of him, right in his face, and starts, like, pounding the ground, like, 1, 2, 3, you're out, bitch. And it's hilarious. And I fucking loved it. And so ever since then, I've been a huge Jorge Masvidal fan. Like I said, I'm rooting for him in this one, not only because I love him as a fighter, but I don't want him to retire. He's just a fun fighter to watch. But Gilbert Burns is also an excellent fighter as well. He's ranked 5th for a reason. So this is a huge win for him. He's a title contender. He wants that shot at the belt. And if he wants to even have a shot at the belt, he has to take out Masvidal. So while I want to see Masvidal win, for selfish reasons, Burns is going to be a difficult fighter for him to beat. I am going to go Burns in this one just because Masvidal, you could tell he's getting old, unfortunately. So this might actually be Masvidal's last fight. I hope it's not. And like I said, if you've never seen that knockout, it's one of the greatest knockouts of all time. Never, ever, ever does it get old for me. There's lots of times where I'll sign on to YouTube. And, you know, when YouTube suggests things for you to watch, that's on there a lot because obviously when I'm doing research or just because I love UFC, UFC things are what I watch on YouTube. And so when I see that pop up, I'm like, oh, I got to watch that again. It only takes a couple seconds. But if you have not seen it, do yourself a favor and watch one of the greatest knockouts of all time, Jorge Masvidal knocking Ben Askren, knocking him the fuck out. Oh, love it. Maybe Masvidal will get another one like that. But that was just one of those moments where it was like the perfect timing too. Because what had happened is Askren went low. And it was just like a perfect wave of anticipation for Masvidal, where he just was running up, took his knee up, and just as Askren was going down, it just was like the perfect wave. And boom, knocked out cold. So thank you, Masvidal, for the amazing UFC moment, one of the greatest UFC moments ever. But good possibility he may be retiring this weekend. Hopefully not, but it's a possibility. He has said it. Then also, this has been the first full week of baseball. So some highlights from the week. On Monday, my San Francisco Giants actually had a really, really damn good game against the Chicago White Sox. But what was most noteworthy of it is they had 7 home runs. Yes, 7 of them. And 4 of them came in the 5th inning. So that was pretty crazy. They did end up winning the game 12-3. So I was pretty excited about that. Then also on Monday, Yordan Alvarez of the Houston Astros hit his 100th home run versus the Detroit Tigers. He is now the fastest Houston Astro to 100 home runs. He did it in 372 games. Then we've got quite a few rookies from Japan this year. I mean, we always have one or two guys come into the league from Japan. Happens all the time. Some of them are really good and some of them just go nowhere. But we've had quite a wave this offseason, and one of them is outfielder Masataka Yoshida, who plays for the Boston Red Sox. This guy hit his first home run on Monday. And so far, he's looking like the real deal. So while I don't believe the Red Sox are going to be a good team this year, Yoshida and Adam Duvall look like they're going to be bright spots, if anything, for the Red Sox. Then on Tuesday, I don't know if you've ever heard of the name Sandy Alcantara, you know, the guy who won Cy Young last year. He decided to have a shutout win on Tuesday. He threw a 100-pitch shutout against the Minnesota Twins in a win, a 1-0 win for the Florida Marlins, or the Miami Marlins. So Alcantara is picking up right where he left off last year. He led the league in shutouts last year, in complete games last year. He obviously won the Cy Young for a reason. And it looks like he's trying to get Cy Young number 2. Now, I know it's real early to be discussing Cy Youngs, but when you come right out the gate and pitch a 100-pitch shutout against a pretty decent Minnesota Twins team, that says a lot. So look out for Alcantara to have yet another amazing season. And then speaking of amazing seasons, Shohei Ohtani is just proving yet again that this guy is something else. So on Wednesday, in a win against the Seattle Mariners, a 4-3 win against the Seattle Mariners, he was pitching, and he had 8 strikeouts, and then he also hit and had an RBI single. That was his first win as a pitcher on the season. So Shohei Ohtani is starting off the season really, really freaking hot, and I hope he stays that way, man, because I really would like to see, I love seeing good talent make it to the postseason and have a shot at a championship, no matter what the sport is. No matter who you are, if you're really good at what you do, I just want to see you have a shot. And that's how I kind of feel about Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout, because Mike Trout's been one of the best players in the league for quite some time now. But Ohtani is a unicorn. He is something we have not seen in this league since Babe Ruth. And I think he's doing more than what Babe Ruth did, because Babe Ruth and his pitching and hitting, it really started to wind down, especially when he went to the Yankees. And so what Ohtani is doing right now, it ain't ever happened before. So you want to see this guy make the postseason and do something. And so far, Ohtani's starting the season off really freaking hot. All right, and now let's get to this week's Trop 5 list. Since we are closing in on the NBA playoffs, I thought the theme this week should be an NBA playoff theme. And since it's been very amusing to me to hear people actually think that the Lakers have a shot at a championship, that's very amusing and cute to me. I, as a Lakers fan, I don't believe they have a shot at all. I mean, of course you have a shot if you make it, but realistically, I don't think they can win a 7-game series against the Denver Nuggets. I don't think they could win a 7-game series against the Memphis Grizzlies. Then when you turn to the Eastern Conference, I definitely don't think they could win a 7-game series against the Milwaukee Bucks. I definitely don't think they could win a 7-game series against the Boston Celtics. I don't think they could win a 7-game series against the Philadelphia 76ers. As a matter of fact, I don't think they could make a 7-game series against the Sacramento Kings. So my faith in the Lakers is pretty fucking low. And also, if you really actually look at the history of the NBA, only 9 teams, number 4 seed or lower, have advanced to the NBA Finals. Only 9. And only 2 have ever won the NBA Finals. So the chances that a team lower than the 4 seed is even going to make the NBA Finals is pretty much slim to none. Let alone winning it is slim to none. So I decided this week's Trop 5 list is going to be the Trop 5 lowest seeds, Trop 5 best lowest seeds to make the NBA Finals. And so let's begin with number 5, the 1981 NBA Finals. The number 6 ranked Houston Rockets versus the number 1 ranked Boston Celtics. Boston won that NBA Finals 4-2. So obviously the Rockets played a great series. This was actually the beginning, really, of that dynasty of the Boston Celtics, that 80s dynasty there with Larry Bird and all those guys. But Houston, basically, what was so crazy about this run is that they clinched a playoff spot on the last day of the season, and they really weren't even supposed to do that. They also were below 500 when they made the playoff spot. They were 40-42, so they were the first team ever to even make the playoffs below 500. So obviously, it was a big deal when they made the NBA Finals. So they were able to put together a nice little second half run, and they were able to put together a nice run in the playoffs. In the first round, they faced off against the defending champion Los Angeles Lakers, and they took them out 2-1 in that first round, because obviously the playoffs were set up a little bit different in some of these eras. So you're going to see that some of the seeds, they're going to have more. Like now we have 10 seeds. That's only happened the last 2 seasons, whereas it used to be 8 or 6 or even 4 back in the 70s. So there are different rounds and different series wins and how many games they played. So in the first round, they used to only play 3 games. As opposed to 7 now. But, I mean, they took out the defending champion Los Angeles Lakers in the first round. And then in the semifinals, they played against the San Antonio Spurs, took them to 7 games, and won in Game 7. They took that series 4-3. Then in the conference finals, they played the Kansas City Kings and took them out 4-1 in that series. Then, would go on the NBA Finals, play against the number one team, the Boston Celtics, and it would go to a Game 7. So, I mean, it was a great series. It was a great run for the Rockets, and they are one of the worst teams ever to make the playoffs, and then one of the worst teams to actually go to the finals. And they took out some really good teams along the way, and then took the Boston Celtics to the brink, even though they didn't get the win. Then at number 4 on my Trop 5 best lowest seeds to make the NBA Finals, of course, I had to put this one on here just because it's my favorite NBA Finals of all time. That would be the 2010 NBA Finals versus the number 4 seeded Boston Celtics against my number 1 seeded Los Angeles Lakers. As I said, it's my favorite NBA Finals of all time. If that's true, you know the Lakers won, which they did. They won that in 7 games. One of so contentious, so insane, just so back and forth. Hell, at one point, the Celtics even had the lead in the series, 3-2. But what was really crazy about this Boston Celtics run is the Cleveland Cavaliers really, really actually dominated the Eastern Conference. And it was basically like a shoe-in, because one thing we never got still to this day was a Kobe Bryant versus LeBron James NBA Finals. You know, all know we wanted it. It never happened. This year, in 2010, we all thought that was happening because the Cleveland Cavaliers were the number one seed, and they were just trucking through everybody and killing it. And the Celtics, they actually had like an up and down season, even though they're just 2 years removed from their NBA Finals championship. They had to battle through injuries. Like I said, they're the number 4 seed. They weren't even number 2. They were the number 4 seed. So them making the finals wasn't really anything anybody expected. But the first round, they ended up playing the Miami Heat. I'm sorry. This is when LeBron played with the Heat, not the Cavaliers. That's right. So instead of the Cavaliers, we thought we were going to get a Lakers versus Heat. That's what I did. Sorry, I totally fucked that up. I thought LeBron played for the Cavs here. No, he played for the Heat in 2010. That's right. But anyways, the Celtics would face the Heat in the first round, and they would dominate the Heat. They dominated them in that series 4-1. They won that series in 5 freaking games. Killed them. And then in the semis, they played the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they took care of them. 4-2. Oh, no. I am wrong. I'm thinking of this. I am thinking of wrong. This is LeBron's last year as a Cavalier. That's right. That is right. They sent LeBron to Miami. This Miami Heat team, though, was good because they had they just were an overall good team. They had Dwayne Wade and a really good team. But this Cavaliers team was really good, too. And they did have a really good series against Boston. Went 6 games, but Boston would win that series 4-2. And like I said, would send basically LeBron. That would be his last game in a Cavaliers uniform his first time around. And then the Eastern Conference Finals, they would face off against the Orlando Magic. This was when Dwight Howard was a really good basketball player, when he was like Defensive Player of the Year and up for like MVP awards and stuff. So Boston would take them out and in 6 games, and they would win that series 4-2. But then they would go up against my Lakers. They did put up a good fight. One of my favorites. And the reason why it's one of my favorites is just because it was a battle every single game. Like, I was on the edge of my freaking seat. And I just remember anytime the Lakers would lose, I'd be just so angry and pissed. And then when they win, it was just great. And I just remember when they won game 7, it was like one of Kobe Bryant's worst games he ever had. But they still won because, Odom, it was probably his best playoff game he ever had because he would always disappear during the playoffs. Ron Artest showed up, had a great game. Really, just everybody else stepped up, and they would end up winning game 7 and go on to win that NBA Finals. I had to put that on there just so I could talk about it again. But also, that Boston Celtics team really had to go up against a lot of good-ass teams along the way. They weren't really expected to make it that far. And they did. All right, then at number 3 on my top 5 best lowest seeds to make the NBA Finals, the 1999 NBA Finals between the number 8 seeded New York Knicks versus the number 1 seeded San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs would ultimately win that NBA Finals in 5 games, 4-1. But this was a tumultuous season for the Knicks. It was actually shocking that they made the playoffs, and then it was even more shocking that they made the NBA Finals. So in mid-season, they fired their GM. That's how shitty this season was going for them. When you fire your GM or your coach mid-season, or have like some big trade where you trade away your star player mid-season, that means your season is in the toilet. And they fired their GM mid-season, and they barely made the playoffs. They backed their asses into the playoffs. But once they hit the playoffs, this team hit their stride and could not be stopped. The first team they had to go up against was the Miami Heat. Took them out in 5 games, 4-1. Then the semifinals, they had to play the Atlanta Hawks. Swept their asses, 4-0. Then went to the Eastern Conference Finals against the Indiana Pacers and beat them in 6 games. Unfortunately, in I believe it was game 6, the last game, Patrick Ewing would tear his Achilles, I believe it was, and he was out for the rest of the playoffs, which was very unfortunate. That's why I feel like the Spurs were so easily able to beat them. Not that I don't think the Spurs would have still won the series. I just think it would have been more of a series had Patrick Ewing been able to play in that one. But when you tear your Achilles, that's pretty difficult to come back from that. So unfortunately, the Knicks would face off against the Spurs. That would actually be the beginning of the Spurs dynasty. And they took them out 4-1. But this was an unprecedented season for the Knicks because, like I said, it was crazy. They were in such disarray. They barely made the playoffs, and then they just trucked it on through the playoffs, made the NBA Finals, and that was it for that Knicks team. Really, that's the last we've ever heard from the Knicks, it kind of feels like. All right, then at number 2 on my top 5 best lowest seeds to make the NBA Finals, the 1969 NBA Finals against the number 4 seeded Boston Celtics versus the number 2 seeded Los Angeles Lakers. Now, this is one of the teams that would actually win the NBA Finals. This Boston Celtics team took it to 7 games and would win 4-3. The Lakers were actually heavy, heavy favorites in this one. I mean, this was the end of the Boston Celtics Bill Russell run. This was actually the last Bill Russell title. He was a coach player at this time. He was just battling through injuries and just having a really difficult time because, I mean, he's a coach and a player. So he's got a lot of pressure on him. And this Lakers team, they had Wilt Chamberlain. They had Jerry West. And, I mean, Jerry West, he actually won the MVP in this NBA Finals, but the Lakers did not win the Finals. And it's also considered one of the greatest NBA Finals upsets in NBA Finals history. So that's why I had to put it up there, not only because they won, but because of how they won. They just really had just such a dominating time and would end up winning Bill Russell's last championship, and he would just ride off into the sunset as one of the greatest basketball players of all time. And their playoff run would begin in the first round against the 76ers. They would actually sweep them. Then in the division finals, they went up against the New York Knicks. And that would go 7 games. And they would win that in game 7. And it's actually the first time the road team won a game 7 as well. So it was just upset central for the Boston Celtics along the way. And they got a huge win and a huge upset, and they are number 2 on my list. Now, the number 1 on my top 5 best lowest seeds to make the NBA Finals is the 1995 NBA Finals against the number 6-seeded Houston Rockets, who were the defending champs at the time, versus the Orlando Magic, who were the number 1 seed. And this Orlando Magic team had Shaquille O'Neal, who was a rookie. And they were a phenomenal team. Like, if you remember this Orlando Magic team, they took the league by storm. But Houston swept them in the finals. And it's crazy because, you know, even though they were the defending champions, their regular season was a mess. They had to deal with injuries. They just had nothing but drama. And everybody was pretty much shocked that they even made the playoffs, let alone the NBA Finals, against such a fantastic team. So here's how their playoff run would end up. In the first round, they would play the Utah Jazz, in which they would actually trail 2-1 in the series, but they would win the series in 6 games, 4-2. Then in the semifinals, they would face off against the Phoenix Suns, in which they would take it to 7 games. They won game 7, so they won that series 4-3. Then in the Western Conference Finals, they would face off against the San Antonio Spurs, and they would take that to 6 games, and they would win that 4-2. And like I said, they were the 6th seed going to the, and they are the defending champions, so it really isn't shocking to me that they were able to make this playoff run, but then the dominating fashion they would do it in, especially in the finals, I had to put them at number one, just because that Orlando Magic team was something else, and they were really just poised to win it all, and they did not, because the Houston Rockets, like I said, the defending champs, they knew what they were doing, they had a solid-ass team, and they would go on to win the NBA Finals. And so that is my top five lowest seeds to make the NBA Finals. So everybody enjoy the final weekend of the NBA. Enjoy the UFC. And enjoy another weekend of baseball. And I will talk to you fools on Monday.